Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Jackson Turkhurst on his story of war, adoption, and finding your purpose in God's plan.
Just knowing who God is, I operate daily out of a place of gratitude. You know, just because I'm so grateful that I get to be here, that I'm still alive, that He spared my life. So if you're going through a season where you feel stuck and you feel like God's not doing that, man, listen, pray a lot. Pray without season. Pray. And listen, seek a community. Seek people in your life who are there to support you, like truly support you and be there for you in your corner. Those are the people who will help you get through this time.
Jackson Turkhurst next. Today on His People, we meet Jackson Turkhurst, a young man who found his identity for many years in scarcity and the trauma he once endured. The son of a town chief, the grandson of a witch doctor, an orphan, a war refugee, a nameless boy trying to survive gunfire and starvation during the Liberian Civil War. And yet today, grounded in gratitude, Jackson has learned to hold fast to his identity in the abundance of God's love and calls each one of us to do the same. In today's conversation, Sonny Cain explores Jackson's remarkable journey shared in his brand new book, The Only Way Forward Is Back, a story of war, adoption, and finding purpose in God's plan.
Well, Jackson, I have so been looking forward to this conversation. Thank you for joining us on His People.
Thank you, Sonny. It's great to be here today.
Well, to start, before we dive into your book, The Only Way Forward Is Back, and I really can't wait to really look at your story and invite our listeners in to just little bits of your story. I know before we hit record, we were talking about the power of looking back in our stories into these moments and being able to see God. And your story is profound in this way. But before we get there, I'd love for our listeners just to get to know you a little bit better. Who is Jackson Turkhurst? Tell us just a little bit more.
Yeah, I'm going to give you a quick snippet of who I am. So I was born in a small rural village in Liberia, West Africa. My dad was the town chief and my grandfather was a witch doctor. And we value our community, our land, our people. We had identities, you know, but at the age of 7 years old, everything changed. My life changed when I was 7 years old. And that's when the Liberian Civil War basically erupted my whole entire life in our country. And it stormed in and did a lot of destruction. So based on that, I became an orphan. Mm-hmm. And I spent the rest of my life, my early years, hiding from rebels, hiding from bullets, and starvation and hunger and so much more, and abandonment. So, and then I end up in an orphanage where I spent a lot of years there. And then God made it possible for me to be adopted into a loving family here in the States. And my story has been written ever since.
And now you're sharing it for people today. And what is, when you think of your book, what is the heartbeat behind why you decided to share this right now?
Well, the heartbeat behind it right now is because, like, there are so many people out there who needs to know that hope and healing are possible, you know, because we live in a society where everyone is faced with so much challenges and hardships and things like that. And this world is hard. You know, and for me, well, my story and where I come from, the trauma, the abandonment and the things I dealt with, you know, I couldn't just sit in that forever. I did not want to sit in that forever. And God had other plans for my life. And in order to move forward in life, I had to do some work to move forward, you know, to reach my full potential of who God has been preparing me to be, you know. So the heartbeat behind this book is really just to dig into my past and make peace with my past and be able to move forward in life and walk in my purpose that God has for me.
So on some levels, would you say the process of writing this book was a healing journey for you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I did other healing methods before, but particularly writing this book, it was very hard. Actually, it was extremely hard. You know, having to visit my past, having to deal with some of the things I didn't want to deal with, and I put off for a while, but it kept hunting me, you know, so I had to go back to it, you know. But writing this book was extremely hard, but extremely fun, but also really, really good therapy for me, because I was able to, you know, deal with my story, or like rewrite it and get it out of my system, get it out of my heart, out of my head, and on a paper, to where other people can have access to it and read it. Perhaps it can inspire them to embrace their own journey and story as well.
Yeah. Now, in your book, you have this quote. You said, "We're not defined by our past, but we are the sum of all of our former experiences." So why do you believe that perspective is so important to you? And how has looking back at these experiences helped you to discover what God has been doing in your story?
Well, the past definitely don't define you. It should refine you, you know, into who God has destined you to become. You know, my past for me caused me to have a lot of anxiety, a lot of stress, a lot of depression, you know, but that's what the devil wanted. He wanted me to stick in that arena of shame, of guilt, or abandonment. But that's not what God had in store for me. You know, he wanted me to walk in my purpose, you know, so I listened to him and I obey him with that. So moving forward with this story, I just want people to be touched by it,
yeah.
You know, and I just want people to really take the chance to, like, you know, dive into their story as well,
yeah.
You know, like, does that make sense?
It does. It yeah. does, because while you're sharing these snippets of your story, and maybe for the average listener, they have not had the extent of what you have had happen in your life.
Probably not.
You know, probably not. Yet you have this way of the reframe, of the refine that you're talking about, of taking right. these snapshots and then showing who God has been to you in the midst of yeah. that. And let's take a minute and look at some of these snapshots. Now, early in your yeah. book, you take readers into a moment of childhood chaos during the war. Can you take us back there? And what was that like for you as a child?
Oh my gosh. Horrible. Terrible. No child should have to go through something like that. I mean, imagine being a 7-year-old child and having to experience war. I'm not talking about your neighborhood being shot up, you know, by gangs and all of that. That's different. That's also very bad. But I'm talking about a civil war where you're legit running for your life and you're being shot at by mm-hmm. multiple people. And at the same time, being recruited to join rebel forces as a young boy. You know, that was the beginning of my life. And then having to live in a jungle for months, like the animals in the jungle, eating like the animals in the jungle, not speaking above a whisper in the jungle, and having to flee the jungle, go to another area to see my family. And then when I got there, you know, I see my dad being beaten, you know, and punched in the face and dragged and threw up in the truck, and, you know, taking him away, you know, all this trauma, it just so much. And then having to live in an orphanage, from one orphanage to another orphanage, to another orphanage. So 4 or 5 different orphanages I lived in. And I'm just by myself. I have no brothers, no sisters. I'm just a 7-8-year-old kid going through this life, and I don't know who I am. I struggle so much with abandonment and a lot of anger. I had a lot of anger, a lot of depression, anxiety, and I was hungry a lot. And there are days where we went without no food. Sometimes once a day you eat. Sometimes you got warm water and prayer. That's all we have for a meal for most days. So, I mean, that was just a quick snippet of like things I went through as a boy living in Africa and running for my life, you know?
And yeah. my guess is that these moments really shaped you. Can you tell us a little bit about how you recognized that stuff that happened at that for that 7-year-old little boy was still present with you today?
Yes, it was still present with me today. Even when I got adopted into my adopted family, I had a lot of scarcity mindset still, and I was always worried and stressed that me being adopted was temporary. I'd be here for a little bit and I'd be out of here. You know, I'm not, this is not my home. So I was just on a go, nothing stable for me, you know? So yeah, I worried a lot, and it was bad. It was so bad. It was hard, but having my family around, my adoptive family around, to reassure me that I'm safe, I'm home, I'm here, and they were here to make sure that I don't have to relive the past anymore.
Yeah.
You know? And that gave me some comfort, but it was very, very hard to really adjust to being a family or learning how to accept love or affection and things like that. It took a while to really accept those things in my life.
Now, as a part of your book, you went there and you mm-hmm. re-explored some of these moments. And I'm curious, why was it important for you to revisit and examine that chapter of your story? And as you did, what did you discover about God?
I tell you this, God is faithful and God is good. And I know that I am made in His image and that He has a purpose for my life. And so for me, going back was a reassurance that, listen, my past does not define me. It should refine me, and it should push me to be better. I should use this story that I have as a motivation to step out of the hole that I'm in, you know, and to lead the way for anybody else or my friends who have experienced similar things in their mm-hmm. life as well, you know, and that was my perspective, and that's how I kind of saw it going about it, you know, throughout all of this. So, but God was really, really, really there with me. And there were times where I had doubts, and I was like, where is God? Where is God? Man, where is God? But I got reminded that, listen, I've carried you through a lot, dude. I can do it again. So there's no need to worry or stress about anything. I got you, you know, and that gave me a peace of mind knowing that He is with me. And though the past I had was very, very horrible, and you can relive that, but God used that pain, God used that experience to shape who I am today in a better way.
I love the line that you said, and I just, for a listener out there, I want to just kind of emphasize it again. You said God had brought you through a lot, and He can do it again.
He can do it again. I promise you that. Like, if God, man, listen, oh boy. So we used to sing a song in the orphanage. It was called Still Have Joy. After all the things we've been through, we still have joy, you know? So if God delivered me from being shot and killed mm-hmm. and brought me where I'm at in life today, who am I? Who am I not to recognize that? Who am I not to give God that glory and to be thankful and grateful to Him for sparing my life? Because listen, food will go away, this will go away. That's not my worry. Listen, if God can do that for me, He can do that for you as well. And He can do more than that. You know, that's who He is. Like, He got so much in store for us. And if He can carry us through our trauma, our everything else in life, He can definitely make sure your phone bills are paid on time, your rent is paid on time.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to worry about those things at all, because He's been doing it your whole life and you just haven't seen it yet. And He's been in the background the entire time working on your behalf.
And there's that beauty of the way that you have made a decision to look at it. Because I know so many people where, because they've walked through such hardship in their life, that sometimes that's the reason that they doubt God. But what I hear in you is this, no, that is the reason I give Him praise. Like that.
Yes.
And how would you, for somebody who is maybe a little more stuck and they are feeling like they're kind of wrestling with some doubt because of what they walk through, how would you guide them to move towards that more hope-filled perspective, that more gratitude-based thinking?
I get it. You know, everybody's different. They got different perspectives and different life experience and different situations. So, but for me, just knowing who God is, I operate daily out of a place of gratitude. You know, just because I'm so grateful that I get to be here, that I'm still alive, that He spared my life. So if you're going through a season where you feel stuck and you feel like God's not doing that, man, listen, pray a lot. Pray without ceasing. Pray. And listen, seek a community. Seek people in your life who are there to support you, like truly support you and be there for you in your corner, those are the people who will help you get through this time. But if you try to do these things by yourself every day, all day, weeks after weeks, and year after year, you will be stuck in the same place, in the same cycle. So you have to break that cycle, step out of that cycle, and reach out for help. You have to ask for help, and you have to pray a lot. You know, being stagnant, being quiet, and being stuck in the house, that's exactly where the devil wants you to be. That's exactly where, you know, he wants you to be stuck, because he don't want you to be healed. He don't want you to seek any kind of help. So if you're going through a season like that, I would encourage you to read the Bible, seek God, seek community, and listen to the voice in your head and have a lot of quiet time. It really does help you to see things from perspective. And look in your household. See all the things you have. You have a beautiful family. You have a house, a car, a roof over your head. Those are things to be grateful for. The little things in life. You don't have to have $1 million or be this person. Like, God made you special and unique and give you special skills that you need to value by yourself and appreciate about yourself. And know that, hey, I am made in his image. So I'm going to do this because I know he's with me and I'm his child.
That's beautiful. And community, community was something that God really brought into your life. I want to talk a little bit about this snippet that you talk about, Sneaky Jesus. could you tell our listeners that story?
The Sneaky Jesus, I would say, fast forward, I'm here in America with the boys choir and we're on tour, and our visas are expired. And back in Liberia, the orphanage that I'm from is being attacked by rebels. It's being burned down by rebels. And we had nowhere else to go. All 12 boys, we in America, this is not our home. We're basically homeless. And out of nowhere, Jesus did this sneaky thing where he made it possible for all 12 boys to be adopted, all because of one woman's yes to him.
Wow.
She listened, she said yes to him, and because she said yes, he opened doors for all my other brothers to be adopted. And then beyond that, 30 other kids, 40 other kids, 50 other kids, you know? And this was one of the moments in my life where I was like, you know what, man, I'm just tired, man. You know, I'm done. Cause like, it's just trouble after trouble after trouble after trouble. And I was like, man, God, what do I do? And then he just went behind my back and said, I got a plan for you, son. Calm down. I got you. I got you covered. And because of that moment, because of that sneaky Jesus moment that he introduced me to my mother, my adoptive mother, I am sitting here today as a living testament to his gratefulness, to his grace, to the plan he has for my life. And I learned to trust him ever since then, even more.
Now, how old were you at the time that you got adopted?
I was about 15 and a half, 16 years old.
Okay.
So I was a little older.
Yeah.
Not your typical babies.
Right. You know? And this was a woman who was just at the choir event. Is that what happened? Like, she was just listening to the choir and ended up becoming your mother. Like, how does that happen?
So crazy thing is, my sisters, like, they were Girl Scouts, and one of them had picked Liberia as a country to study, and they heard about a Liberian a cappella boys choir having a tour in the community, and my mom was like, oh, they got Liberian guys from the choir here, you know, maybe this is a good thing for your project, let's go check it out. No expectations. No decisions. They just want to come check it out, get entertained or for the project and go back home. Simple. But God had other plans. God had other plans. So when my sisters, my mom got there and then we started singing and then our pastor got on stage and shared our testimony and what we're experiencing. My goodness, it hit her different. It hit her different. She's like, I came here for experience and I'm getting asked to adopt. What the heck? You know what I'm saying? So...
Wow. Well,
that's kind of how it happened. You know, she brought her girls to kind of hang out, to experience this culture thing with us. And next thing you know, it's like she's taking two teenage boys home to her house.
Yeah. It points to the way God is in the details. I mean, yes. Even that her daughters would be studying Liberia for the exact moment that you would be in town for this choir. I mean, right. So many things had to happen for that to happen in your story. And it's a reminder for us, God is in the details, the small things. Yeah. And what happened there was so beautiful. Now, and I would encourage our listeners, you got to pick up his book so that you can really hear the details of these stories. But there was this place, this beautiful, almost ordinary moment where you're talking about fresh baked brownies. And I mean, of course, I honed in on that because I'm like, I got to love me some brownies. But this fresh baked brownies moment turned into something so much deeper for you. Would you mind telling us that story and why it was important for you to examine specifically where you were talking about this scarcity mindset?
Yeah. So, you know, coming from where I come from a very poor life and being a ward orphan and living through orphanages and starving after years and starving, I always was hungry, you know, and I didn't know how to really react to things when I have abundance of it, you know. Mm-hmm. So when my parents adopted us into our amazing home, our family, my mom took me and my brother shopping to the grocery store. We were like blown away, like, oh my goodness, this place is beautiful. They got fruits over here. They got cereals for days, milk for days. We were like blown out of park. Like, we don't have this in my country. We never had this before. So we were like little kids in like little Christmas land. But when we got home and with the groceries, my brother took some of the groceries into his room and put it under his bed. And then I came in the living room and grabbed a lot of the brownies and for myself, because I love brownies and chocolate chip cookies. So I grab a whole bunch and take it to my room. And my mom's like, whoa, what are you doing, son? I said, what do you mean? This is mine. She said, no, you have to share with your sisters. You have to share with the family. And that goes to show, like, in Liberia, we live on a day-to-day basis. And food was never readily available to us. So any chance that we had any kind of food, anything, we kind of hoard it, we store it, and we hid it for ourselves because we were always living in a scarcity mindset that we might not get that tomorrow. It's not going to happen tomorrow, you know? We were always fearful that we would not have food tomorrow. And that's how it was for me for the longest time growing up as a child. I was starving a lot, like a lot. I was very malnourished. And then coming to a land of abundance, I still brought the same mindset with me because that's how I've been conditioned since I was a boy, you know? And that's how most of us are, you know, living in a land of abundance. We still don't see that, how much blessed we are, and we still live in the past. And we have to really be present and see where we're at now and appreciate the blessings around us and stop living scared. Mm-hmm. Because there's so much more in the kingdom of God for all of us to share.
Yeah, and it's interesting because while we're talking about brownies and we're talking about a physical hunger, I think that people get caught up in that scarcity maybe in way more ways than just food, I think, depending on their story. So how would you encourage somebody? Actually, you wrote this. I want to read this quote. You said, "The remedy for scarcity is learning to walk in abundance, not of stuff or brownies, but of love, acceptance, patience, forgiveness, and being safe enough to process it all." Can you unpack that last part for us? What does it mean to be safe enough to process it all?
Safe enough to process it all. I would just say that being a place where that you're in touch with God, you know, you're in touch and knowing that your Heavenly Father has so much more to offer you, so much more to give you. So there's no need to stress. Listen, if you can provide for the birds, provide for the deers, like the ants, like what more about you who are made in His image? You know, He cares a lot more about you. So there's no need to stress. Like, simple as that. You don't need to stress. Just know that He is with you. He knows what's best for you. He's going to take care of you despite all your worries and concern. I promise you that.
How would you encourage people to actually begin to walk in abundance?
Appreciate what you have. Mm. Appreciate the little you have. Appreciate the small things you have. In Liberia, you know, we had a saying that says, little is much when God is a part of it, which mm-hmm. means, like, you know, if you have a little thing and you have a little small thing and you give it to God and you appreciate it, you admire it, you love it, right? Because you pray for that little thing and God gave you little, but that little is so much more, you know? So having a, living in America, you have so much in America. There's so much to be grateful for. You know, your family, the house, the car, the job, the work, everything you have, there's so much more to know that you have. And you start walking in that truth, knowing that, listen, I am blessed. I am not this. I am not that. God has his hands over me. I'm highly favored. And he has a plan for my life to where if I don't have food today, I don't have to stress about it because he's going to provide regardless because he knows me. He knows what I need. Does that make sense?
It totally does. It really does. And it's just, it's always the simple things, right? God told us it's the simple to remember, to be grateful. But we bypass those things and we get caught up in our, you know, our typical, you know, I mean, I think we get caught up in complaining or what's going wrong or, but you're just inviting us into gratitude.
That's it. Gratitude. It goes a long way. And coming from where I come from, a lifestyle from Liberia, being an orphan child and starving and hungry and fear, and coming to America where there's so much, I just learned to be grateful because I pray so much to be here in this country, to have the life that I wanted to and to have today, that God has given me that life now, and I will be a fool not to be grateful to him. And my gosh, like every day I wake up in the morning, I'm like, thank you, Jesus, for waking me up, because there are so many people in the world who is not awake today. And I'm awake. You know, there are people who have it worse than you. I promise you that, you know. So be grateful for the little things you have in life. The littlest thing. It don't have to be the biggest bank account, the biggest car, the biggest house, but the smallest things in your life. Appreciate that and cherish that. That goes a long way. And God sees that in you. And when he sees that, he's going to bless you with even bigger things.
Being faithful with the small things, and then you're given more, and that's also right. Being grateful for the small things, right?
Absolutely.
Now, as we're kind of bringing this to a close here, when you look back at the key moments in your life, and you told many of them through your story, what do you see about your purpose in God's plan?
Well, I feel like right now, I am finally starting to work in the purpose that God had for me. You know, God took me through this journey of being abandoned at 7 years old and living through all these things. But he saw my faithfulness. He saw that I was always faithful to him and kept a relationship with him. And I've had this nagging longing, this passion to share that testimony of how grateful I am that he has brought me through all of these things, you know, and I just want to really honor him. I want to honor him for like what he has done in my life by learning to obey him and using this story he has given me to share this story to inspire other people, right? And that's, for me, that's a working in my purpose, you know, to share this story, inspire other people, to embrace their own journey and share their story as with other people, because God gave us all stories to share, not just to carry. And if my story can be an inspiration to other people, then I know for a fact that I'm doing what he has called me to do, which is to spread his message for hope and resilience and redemption to all his people who are going through a season of life.
It reminds me of in the book of Revelation that says, through the blood of their lamb and the word of our testimony, the enemy is defeated. Right. And so your story gives so much hope to people. If you are listening in, I would encourage you to pick up Jackson Turkhurst's book, The Only Way Forward Is Back. It's a beautiful reminder that even in the hard parts of our story, they can become places where God meets us and does something new. If you want to go deeper, I encourage you to pick up his book today. Well, Jackson, thank you for investing your time in our audience. Do you have anything that you would like to leave them with today?
Yes, I would say that I want to express my deepest gratitude to all adopted parents, foster parents, or, you know, people think about adoption, because adoption is not an easy task, you know? Mm-hmm. And I just want to really sincerely from the bottom of my heart, say thank you. Thank you to all the parents out there who has made a sacrifice of a lifetime to open the hearts, not just the home, to my brothers and sisters who needs love, who needs a home, who needs a future. And I just really truly appreciate that from the bottom of my heart, to say thank you. Thank you for what you're doing. And I really hope that God continues to bless you and your family. If we can connect, I'm here. If you want to talk, I'm here. But I just want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart, and I appreciate what you're doing. So thank you.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to our guest, Jackson Turkhurst, author of The Only Way Forward Is Back. On tomorrow's program, it's Ken Ham on his testimony of God's providence in the founding of Answers in Genesis.
To get to that point where you say, Lord, if you want me to do this, or you want me to go somewhere, I'm 100% committed to doing it. When you do that, I find that there'll be circumstances, there'll be events in your life that God will show you things. He will burden you in a particular way. And I believe that God will open doors and guide you through that.
That's tomorrow at the same time right here on His People. Thanks for listening.